Hello. Today is Sunday, December 30th, 2012. Today we're going to talk about pluggable authentication modules and two-factor authentication with SSH. Today is going to be I'll make it as colorful as possible. This is, I think, sometimes a dry topic. If you know any feedback or any questions, or if you guys have any information about what I cover here today, just contact me via my email address. That's beto@haventfoundme.com. Again, that's beto@haventfoundme.com. That's B-E-T-O, Beto. So today we're going to cover Debian and Red Hat based systems. I'm using CentOS and Debian as my in my lab, I guess you could say, or as my base. And I have an Android device as well as a iOS device, a iPhone 4S and a Galaxy S3. A few things that if you guys want to do before we start off is just go ahead and go to the Google Play Store or the iOS App Store and download the Google Authenticator app. That app is going to help you later on when we're going to need it to import our verification profiles so that we can authenticate to our SSH server. FYI, any files that we configure today, I highly recommend that you back them up first. Usually what you can do is just rename, like copy the file and, you know, copy it with the file name and end it with like a .old. So like today we're going to mess with a file called /etc/pam.d/sshd. And I would just basically just rename, just copy it and name it sshd.old. You know, that's only because pluggable authentication modules can really screw up your system. You basically can lock yourself out of your system. So the most important thing right now is just remember what you did to what application and to what file, so that if you do have to reboot and go into run level 1 and, you know, do all that, you can do it without, you know, you can do that and go ahead and just, you know, restore from backup versus, you know, having to reinstall an entire operating system. Because I really hate that. I would really hate for that to happen to you. So, if you're configuring a server that you have no physical access to, I would highly recommend that you have two simultaneous SSH connections to the server, and go ahead and authenticate as root. You don't have to SSH as root. You can just, you know, SSH as your normal user and then just, you know, sudo or su as your as a root user, and make sure both of them are logged in as root user, and to ensure that they don't log themselves out because of timeout or whatever, just, you know, do like a quick, you know, man ifconfig, like pull up open up a file in vi or something, you know, just to make sure that you have two connections to one server that you're going to be messing around with the SSH configurations to, because if you do mess up, you know, at least, what, you know, as long as you don't log off or your internet connection doesn't get severed or anything like that, you can just, you know, restore like that. So, and this is something you can do even if it's a local server too. Just have, you know, two SSH connections set up and, you know, you'll be good to go. Anyway, so given that, you know, go ahead and just to give us a overview of PAM and SSH and Google Authenticator, you know, just to put it all in a 30,000 foot view or in one package, however you want to say it. The biggest thing is that PAM, or pluggable authentication modules, allow you to authenticate to your Linux system, and Unix, and it's there too as PAM, but in other NICs, systems, they may not be dependent on PAM, but you can implement PAM, which is really cool. Other like AIX, you know, they use like methods.config, but you can still implement pluggable authentication modules into the primary authentication settings for the system. But anyway, on Debian and CentOS specifically, what you have is PAM, pluggable authentication modules. And what we're going to work with, a specific module today called the Google Authenticator module. And we're going to work with a specific application, which is SSHD or SSH or OpenSSH Server, however you want to classify it. But on my system, it's OpenSSH, but it's labeled as SSHD in the /pam.d/SSHD file. So that's the big overall is we're going to be using one module and we're going to use one application. You could use tons of other applications. You can use Samba, sudo, you can use login, you can use GDM, you can use a lot of other applications defined in your /etc/pam.d directory. And you know, you can use this, you can use different modules too. There's the Winbind module from Samba. There's a, you know, there's the Barada one-time pad module that you can use. It's similar to this Google Authenticator. It's a little slightly different in some ways though. But again, there are many different modules and then there are many different applications. So basically what this creates, is a chain. What you're doing basically is if you have several different modules, you can create a chain of authentication settings that will basically allow a user to authenticate to a system, which will require them to input specific authentication credentials. So in this case, what we're going to do today is we're going to implement SSH with the Google tool, with the Google Authenticator, and when we SSH to a box, we'll have to input a 6-digit verification code generated from our Android or iOS device. And that's really cool from a security perspective, from ease of use, from a lot of different perspectives. That's really neat because you'll basically be able to use a trusted device on an unreliable network to authenticate via SSH to a trusted destination, and that's really good. You know, that's really useful. Other scenarios too, you could use this on an unreliable or untrusted device. It's just the problem with that is keyloggers, but you know, it is a good method to conceal your system credentials. Because remember, your system credentials, once a user has access to your system, if they have the ability to access your system somehow, you know, whether it's physically or some other method, you know, like using Webmin or something like that, or LDAP or something where your system credentials allow you to like surrogate as a root user, you know, that's a problem, because you know, you're just gonna get, you know, once they've got physical access, it's done, you know, the game is over. But if it's a remote user and you know, they're able to actually get a shell prompt on your net, on your device, you know, system credentials is gonna what be needed in order to surrogate as a root user. But again, like I said, if you wanted to surrogate to sudo or su as on that system, you could implement the Google Authenticator to do that. So you could inevitably have your verification code be required every time your password, every time you prompt it for a password, system-wide. It's up to your discretion. It's up to you how you want to implement this. I'm simply implementing it from, you know, to use it via SSH because I feel that I'm always going to be using a trusted device. If I ever find myself using an untrusted device, you know, I'll have to reconsider some things or maybe use an on-screen keyboard or something, you know, but again, you know, this is a really good first step to, you know, opening up a lot of other methods of protecting yourself and your system and all these other things that we have. Couple things that you're gonna need is a couple things to understand is we backed up our files, we've got simultaneous connections, and we know where we want to implement this at. So right now we're gonna implement it with SSH on Debian systems. One thing that I have to point out is that there's a common auth configuration authentication setting that you may have to disable. It's up to you again, up to your discretion. And that's simply because if it's not disabled in the SSHD configuration file, which exists in your /etc/pam.d, if you don't disable that, then when you implement the Google Authenticator, pluggable PAM module, it's gonna prompt you for the verification code, but then it's gonna ask you for your Unix account password. Again, this goes back to the whole, you know, how many levels or layers of security you want to implement, and you know, what do you want to do ultimately? So, anyway, on CentOS, this doesn't exist, so you'll simply just implement the Google Authenticator to the top of your authentication chain, and that's it, you know, that's all you need. Also, keep in mind that you don't have to have the Google Authenticator as like the only thing that to authenticate your system. As I said, you could have your system credentials be prompted for, or you can use another layer of one-time passwords, where, you know, or some other PAM module that requires or asks for your credential information. You know, like I said, PAM is very neat, is very good, is very flexible, because, you know, you're creating a series of authentication events that are either sufficient, required, or just, you know, looked over in a sense. You know, they may not even be needed or something, but what I'm trying to explain is, if you want to have multiple layers of credentials that you have to enter mandatory in order to access a system, you can do it. And that's, you know, that's ultimately that's what I'm getting at. Anyway, so going back to this, it's a few simple steps. What you're gonna need on your system, you're gonna need GCC installed, Git, and you're gonna need Make. These are development tools required for this implementation of the Google Authenticator, because ultimately what you're doing is you're gonna be cloning the Git repository of the Google Authenticator. Then you're gonna be that Git repository actually includes the iOS and iOS, Android, and BlackBerry applications. Which, here's a little neat little trick: if you're doing Android development, you might be able to actually run this Android application on your desktop. So you kind of, in a sense, have a desktop client. But, you know, that's, you know, for Android developers or even iOS developers, if, you know, they want to run the iOS app on their Mac. Anyway, so in that Git repository that you're gonna clone, it's gonna include the smartphone applications, as well as the PAM libraries that you need to compile, which create the pluggable authentication module. Anyway, so after you run a Git command, it's gonna be like a git clone https://code.google.com/p/google-authenticator. Again, all this information is gonna be on the show notes. All the links and all the commands, they're all gonna be in the show notes. So you're gonna run this command, you're gonna clone the repo, and make sure you do this in like a good working directory, like you know, in your downloads or in your documents or somewhere in a home directory where, you know, it's not scattered somewhere. So just make sure you change directories before you run this Git command, because it'll clone it wherever your present working directory is at. After you do that, you're gonna clone it, you're gonna change directories into the libpam directory inside the Google Authenticator development files. And then from there, you're gonna run a command called make space install, and this basically creates and installs the pluggable authentication module. The cool part is that they've upgraded it so that in the past you actually had to manually move and change the permissions and the ownership of the application and the file and the PAM module to the appropriate directories. You don't have to do that anymore. You just run make install, and that's it. It'll compile and move everything and install everything that you need in the appropriate directories. The next part is going to be the important part, because however you wish to implement the Google Authenticator is gonna be up to your discretion. Me, I'm simply going to use the Google Authenticator for SSH access. So in order to do that, I'm gonna, on my Debian system, I'm gonna go to /etc/, on my Debian and Red Hat system, I'm gonna go to /, I'm gonna use my favorite text editor, Nano, VI, whatever, and I'm gonna go /etc/PAM.d/SSHD, that's going to open up the SSH authentication settings. What you can simply do is on the second line or the very top of that file, doesn't matter, the very, very top first line of that file, you're going to type in auth, A-U-T-H, hit the tab key, required, hit the tab key, PAM, P-A-M, underscore, Google, underscore, authenticator.so. Save it. Now, on your Debian system, if you're running a Debian system, look down around line number 10, 11, or 12, around there. You're going to look at a line at a stanza that begins with an at symbol. And it says at include space common dash auth. What this does is it includes the common authentication modules in the common auth file that's in the same directory that the SSHD file's in. What I'm going to do is I'm actually going to put a pound sign in front of the at the start of that line where the at sign symbol is at, I'm gonna put a pound sign there to comment that line out, because I don't want to include the comment off. If you guys feel that that's wrong, or you know I'm crazy or something like that, just shoot me an email, Beto@havenfoundme.com, and let me know, and you know I can let others know that, you know, hey, this is why it's good to have the common auth included. Now, some will say that it's good to have the common auth included because then if the verification code fails, or for some reason, you know, it's failing on your phone, or you've got to get to that system in a hurry, you can break the chain by, instead of making the Google Authenticator a requirement, you make it sufficient. And what that is, you know, it's not required, but if you put the correct verification code in, it'll work, but then the common auth will kick in. That's if we don't comment the common auth out. Basically what that means is, if I make the Google Authenticator sufficient, if I put the wrong code in, I will still be required to put in my system credentials, and I will still be allowed access to the system. What I'm doing is I'm making the Google Authenticator the only thing that gives me the ability to SSH to my box. It's upon your discretion how you want to implement this. So you can make the Google Authenticator sufficient and common auth will still kick in, or you can actually make the Google Authenticator required and still be required to put in your system credentials. You know, there's plus sides and downsides to this, all up to your discretion. All right, so I'm gonna comment out or just even delete it, but I commented out common auth, the at include space common auth. All right, so now my SSHD file is configured, my Google Authenticator is in place, and the last thing I need to do now is the two last things I have to do now is I have to configure my SSH server, and I have to restart my SSH server as well, and I actually have to generate my Google Authenticator profile so that I can import that to my phone. So those three things, instead of two things, three things. So the next part is to go into my SSHD underscore config file, which is located on the Debian Red Hat system or CentOS. It's going to be in your /etc/ssh/sshd_config. All right. In this file is your SSH configuration. Now, in another episode, I would like to go over hardening your SSH server, because there are some things that you can do to, you know, to make your SSH server a little more secure and a little more up to date. But we'll go that in another episode. In this show, all we're concerned about in the file, in the SSHD_config file, which is also your SSH server configuration file, all we're concerned about is one stanza. Go ahead and open up this file with your favorite text editor as a privileged user, and you're going to change the challenge response authentication stanza. It should be set to no. What you want to do is change that no to a yes. After you change the no to a yes, the next step is to restart your SSH server. In order to restart your SSH server on Debian or CentOS, you will make sure, when you change that stanza challenge response authentication to yes, make sure you backed up that file first and then save that after you change that stanza to yes. After you've saved the file, what you want to do is restart the SSH server. Remember what I said. You must make sure you're connected to your box right now via SSH. Make sure that you have more than one SSH connection, and make sure that those connections are logged in as a privileged user so that if you have to roll back settings, you can roll them back. So in order to restart SSH, you simply type in service space SSH space restart. On CentOS, I believe it's service space SSHD space restart. So on your Debian system, it's SSH. On your CentOS system, it's SSHD. All right. The last thing we have to do now. Let's generate our Google Authenticator profile for the user that we want to use the Google authentication with. So let's go ahead and su, if you're root right now, which you should be, su space and type in the username you want to set up the Google profile for. So now you should have that user set up. Now, if this user's path isn't set up for user bin local, I believe, what you would have to do then is just type in the absolute path to the Google Authenticator application. And in order to do that, I believe you can, I believe what you can do as the root user is just type in where is space Google-Authenticator, and that'll give you the absolute path to the application. On my system, and more than likely on everyone else's system because of the Git clone, is /user/local/bin/Google-Authenticator. You've only had to do this if the user's path is not set up. So just, you know, FYI. So as the user that you want to SSH as, you go ahead and the user that you are, these are two important things before you do this. Make sure the user was able to SSH in the past. So this is a user that, you know, whatever user you use to SSH to the box for this tutorial, go ahead and, you know, that's the user you want to do this with. If you have other users, go ahead and do it for them as well. But just make sure they can SSH or have SSH in the past, you know, just so that, you know, to rule out, you know, any issues. So run the command Google Authenticator. And if you need to know the path, again, it's /user/local/bin/Google Authenticator. What this is going to do is going to generate a couple things. You're going to have a verification key. You're going to also have a URL and a verification code. And this is the neat part about it. You're going to have some emergency scratch codes. These emergency scratch codes are basically codes to be used in the event that you lost your phone or you don't have the ability to use the Google Authenticator app or something like that. Your battery died. These scratch codes are one-time use. So, you know, you use them and that's it. The URL is basically, it basically is a URL to generate the QR code you need, in order to import the profile to your iOS or Android device. Now, you could just manually type in the secret key, which is the same, you know, it's instead of having to use the QR code, you'll type in like this 15 or 16 digit secret key, which is no big deal. It's just that with the QR code, I find it a little more useful because it automatically puts in the username and server name. So instead of you having to manually put that in too. So, you know, up to you and your abilities. So anyway, now you've got your Google Authenticator secret key and the URL if you want to use a QR code. You have your emergency scratch codes and, you know, you're good to go now. The next thing now you got to do is just put in that secret key or put in that URL on a web browser and go to your Android or iOS device. And from your Android or iOS device, you will simply open up the Google Authenticator app, go to the settings and set up an account, manually add an account, scan a barcode, or enter provided key, however you're going to do it. Use the Google goggles on your iOS device, or whatever QR scanner you got for your iOS device, Google goggles on your Android device, and then you point the phone to the QR code from your web browser that's displayed on your web browser after putting that link, after going to the link that was provided to you, and boom, it's going to be imported and you're going to see it there with the username at the server name. You know, that's it. You now have implemented two-factor auth and you've generated a two-factor auth profile using Google Authenticator. A few tidbits before we test this. When you run the Google Authenticator command, there's a couple questions it asks you. One of them is, do you want the tokens to be time-based? I say yes, because if you have multiple devices like I do, it's beneficial for them to be time-based, because then what happens is you don't have to worry about the devices needing to be in sync. Meaning not in sync with time, but in sync with the series in which I use this code today on this device. So that means I gotta match up the other device to the series number that device A is on. With the time based, all I need to make sure is the time is correct on my phone, and that's it. I don't have to worry about anything else. So that means I can have 4, 5, 6, 7, 10 devices with running Google Authenticator, so that if the battery runs out of one device, I got another device that can still provide me the authentication that I need in order to get to my server. Another question it asks you is that, do you want to disallow multiple uses of the same authentication token? And I say yes to this as well. I just want this to be one time. So if the token's used, that's it. That means that if someone tries to eavesdrop on my communication and they see that I used, you know, the 6-digit PIN, they can't go back and try to SSH with the same username to the same server trying to use the same one-time pad. That's it. You know, therefore, I have to wait every 30 seconds after I use one, I have to wait for the next one, which is no big deal. You know, that's, you know, RSA Secure ID uses that same concept. By default, tokens are good for 30 seconds, and in order to compensate for possible time skew, okay, so the third question it asks you is time synchronization issues. If I want to extend the window of which tokens could be used. So basically, in a 1 minute and 30 second window, I can use, if my phone is off by 1 minute, I can still use the token that was from 1 minute ago on my server. You can extend this to 4 minutes, but again, you know, that's you don't really need that. You know, you can, you know, it's best to keep things tight, and at 1 minute and 30 seconds, you know, you shouldn't have any issues. If the last question asked is pretty neat. If the computer that you are logging into isn't hardened against brute force login attempts, you can enable rate limiting for the authentication module. By default, this limit attaches no more than 3 login attempts every 30 seconds. So basically, it's protecting against brute force attacks, which is really good. Especially, you know, given that you're trying to, if you don't have something like this implemented against SSH, you know, they basically just have to crack 6 digits, you know, from a specific time period. And there's only, I believe, what is it, like 10 to the 6? So that's like one, I don't know. Anyway, so, you know, I put yes for all that. So, and then I get my secret key, and I get my URL for my QR code, and I get my scratch-off codes, and I'm good to go now. So, you know, I hope this was informative. I hope this stuff is really useful for any of you. And anyway, so now let's go ahead and test my SSH configuration. Just make sure, like I said, you have simultaneous connections to your server right now. You know, just don't sever those. Just open up a new terminal and SSH to your server now. And you should have a prompt for, instead of it saying, you know, username at this server and your password, it should actually say verification code. And that's a good sign. That means that everything's working as intended. On CentOS, I put mine as sufficient. So I was actually getting the username at server with a password. Like I said, don't worry, just go ahead and use the verification code, because it worked with me on my CentOS box. It didn't prompt me for my it didn't prompt me saying verification code. All it said was my normal login banner, which is username at server in brackets with the password and the prompt there. So if that happens and you know you've implemented this correctly, go ahead and try the verification code, and it'll more than likely just log you in. I've noticed that if you don't restart SSH, this is what usually happens. You don't get prompted. You don't get the verification code prompt. You get the normal SSH prompt. So just make sure you went through the steps correctly and all that. Anyway, so now your SSH is in your box using Google 2-factor auth. The last thing I need for you guys to try, because just in case if some of you, you know, implemented the pluggable authentication module in a different application like su or sudo, go ahead and run the sudo, however you surrogate yourself as root, go ahead and do that right now. Because if you messed around with other files, while trying to do this, you know, especially the su or surrogate files, you know, you may lock yourself out of being able to surrogate as root user. So go ahead and just do that real quick. And you should just be prompted for a password. Go ahead and put your password. And then you should be a root right now. And if that works out, then you should be good to go. That means, you know, you've successfully SSH'd your box using Google 2-factor authentication, with something you have and something you know. And, you successfully, implemented the pluggable authentication module for SSH and only for SSH. And as well as you've been able to, you know, deter any attackers from trying to gain access to your system via remote access through SSH. Thank you. more thing before you continue is to make sure that when you use the URL link, the QR code, use that link in a private browser mode, because if you don't, then that link is going to show up in your web history. And if a malicious attacker has, if someone has gained access to your, you know, your Firefox sync or Google Chrome web browser, they can ultimately basically look in your web history and pull up your QR code for, you know, whatever server you have, and just basically, you know, mimic that QR code on their device, and now they've got the Google authentication verification codes needed to access your server. So just like I said, pull up a private browser mode, or just don't even bother if you want. It's up to you, it's your discretion, but you know, this is just to keep security in mind and to avoid, you know, any future incidents if someone actually gains access to your information via a different avenue. So, you know, just different things to think about. Another thing too is, if you have a web history, if in your command line interface, you keep a web history, or not a web history, but a command line history, where like on a Mac, you can see, you know, the last 1,000 lines or 500 lines displayed on your command line. Just make sure that that's cleaned up as well, because, you know, the URL, the secret key, and all the emergency scratch offs are going to be displayed. So just make sure after you do things like this that you clean up, and any places where this information can still be stored. Just because all it takes is for someone to gain access, you know, without even having to talk to you, or, you know, or even having access to your server. So just something to keep in mind, you know, whenever you're doing these kinds of things, is make sure you go into some sort of cleanup mode, and, you know, you go back a few steps and you say, you know, can I generate that QR code in a different fashion, where it's in my command line history, it's in my web URL history, or what? Or is it in my, or if it's in my, clipboard history as well, you know, I gotta be careful with that as well. Anyway, other than that, I think, I don't really have anything else. I hope you guys didn't find this, you know, I hope I didn't drag this on too slow, and I hope you guys really enjoyed or found this useful, and I hope you guys implement some sort of two-factor authentication on your system. Google, like I said, Google Authenticator is a really good pluggable authentication module. There's another one called Barada. I don't know if it's Spanish or some other word. It does have an Android app called Gort, G-O-R-T. And it's the same concept as a Google Authenticator. You can import multiple profiles. The only downside is that it's not time-based. It's kind of series-based. So the issue with that is, if you use a code, a one-time pad, every pad that exists before that is deprecated, meaning you can't use them. They're disabled, or, you know, removed from, you know, the list, you know. So the issue behind that is, if you have multiple devices, then you won't be able to actually use those multiple devices, because you'll actually have to catch one device. You actually have to make one device synchronize with the others. And that means that if you used 100 one-time pads on device A, on device B, you've got to catch up to the 101 one-time pad, which is what the system is looking for. Because even though you may skip some to kind of be like, oh, you know, maybe I could, you know, skip some and I'll leave some one-time pads available, I'll start from 100 on this device and I'll start from 1 on device B, it won't work, because everything below 100, below, you know, the 100th time that you used it, is going to be deprecated. That's the one downside that I found to it. But again, doesn't matter. It's still two-factor auth. If you have one device, it works, no big deal. Get it on your system and use it, implement it. You know, use these technologies and harden your systems as best as you can. Anyway, I hope you guys enjoyed. I hope this was very useful. And again, I'll have a lot of the steps and links on the show notes. And I also want to, like I said, I also want to in the future talk about getting SSH hardened up on your systems and what you can do to get your SSH server up and, you know, up with the times, I guess. And again, you know, thanks for listening. Thanks for taking the time to listen to Hacker Public Radio. I also want to thank Hacker Public Radio and the community and the contributors for all you guys do and all the listeners out there. Have a great evening. Have a great new year. And thanks again. If you have any questions, you can contact me. That's Beto@havenfoundme.com. BETO@havenfoundme.com. All right. Good night and goodbye.
You have been listening to Hacker Public Radio at hackerpublicradio.org. We are a community podcast network that releases shows every weekday, Monday through Friday. Today's show, like all our shows, was contributed by a HPR listener like yourself. If you ever considered recording a podcast, then visit our website to find out how easy it really is. Hacker Public Radio was founded by the Digital Dog Pound and the Infonomicon Computer Club. HPR is funded by the Binary Revolution at binrev.com. All Binrev projects are proudly sponsored by Lunar Pages. From shared hosting to custom private clouds, go to lunarpages.com for all your hosting needs. Unless otherwise stated, today's show is released under a Creative Commons Attribution Share Alike 3.0 license.